This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks for joining us. We start our show today with a difficult story. A speed skater has come forward with her story of alleged abuse by a fellow athlete years ago as she trained in her home state of New York. The skater was 15 years old at the time, the Olympic medalist much older. He continues to be an elite name in speed skating and has gone on to serve in a leadership role in the sport's governing body. This interview will be disturbing to some listeners. It's the first time she's told this story publicly, and we're presenting the interview with no editing of its content. Lake Effect's Mitch Tite conducted the exclusive interview, and he has more.
When we first spoke with skater Bridie Farrell, our intent was to get some insight into her history with speed skating, her efforts to make the Olympics more than a decade ago in short track skating, and her effort today to reinvent herself as a long track skater in Milwaukee. We aired that interview a few weeks ago, but Bridie Farrell stayed in touch because there was another story she says she needed to tell. Bridie Farrell, welcome back to Lake Effect.
Thank you very much.
We talked a few weeks ago about your history in the sport of speed skating, when you first started it, your various tries to make the Olympic team, your leaving the sport and coming back to the sport. But we left out a key part of the story, and I think this is as good a way to ask as any, what was the part of the story we left out?
Yeah, it definitely is a key part of my story personally. And thanks for even taking the time to listen to me and let me tell my story. But basically, what I wanted to share with you is how when I was 15, I was sexually abused by another skater who was 33, and it lasted for a couple months, and the impacts lasted for years and still to this day.
Let me ask the obvious question that I'm sure anyone would ask. And there are a number of questions, but this happened obviously a while ago. Why are you telling the story now?
Why now? Why now? Because it took me the first 5 years, say, after it happened, maybe 5 to 7 years, I was scared. I was petrified. I was young. I was in speed skating. I was knocking on the door to making the junior national team and the senior national team, and I didn't want to jeopardize that. So
you're worried if it came out, he would do something to stop your career from happening?
Yeah, exactly. And I also – I was a little kid. Why would someone believe me? And what we hear about all the time, it was those thoughts and those fears that prevented me from saying anything. Then there was a period of time when I didn't say anything because I realized that I was hurt and I was broken. And it took a long time and a lot of work and some pretty dark times to come to grips with that, to reconcile with that, to put myself back together. And then ultimately, why now? Because it happened to me, but it's not defining me. And I'm here to try and change the culture of sport. And I'm a strong person and I'm confident and I'm not scared of him or anyone or anything like that. So, and why now? Because it's the right thing to do.
Did it play into your decision to get back into skating? We did this interview a few weeks ago, and you talked about being out of the sport for 6 years. Would it have been easier to stay out of the sport and not revisit that part of your life?
Definitely. It was for a while that once I realized the impact that this had on my life and how much it broke me, smell of a skating rink, which if anyone is a speed skater, hockey player, a figure skater, there is a very distinct ice rink smell world over. And honestly, that I could not take that. And I also wanted to be close and real with friends in skating, but there was this big secret and there was this big part that I wasn't disclosing. And in order for me to be honest and to be truly friends with these people, I needed to come forward and say, this is a huge thing I'm battling. And over the last year, I did that. And there's a handful of folks within the sport that I wanted to connect with, and I did. I told them the truth, like I'm telling you the truth now. And it made it possible for me to consider being back in the rink. And it's great to be back in the rink.
What was your friend's reaction?
It's been amazing how supportive everyone has been and how everyone has just apologized and has been there to support me. And the people that I was training with at the time that I've told, they all apologized and said, I was there. I'm sorry. I didn't intervene. I'm sorry. I didn't know. I'm sorry. And that definitely helps. But and then people tell me that I'm brave and maybe nuts for coming out and saying this. But, you know, I mean, this is hard, but it's not as hard as it was.
You said when this happened and in the 5 years after it happened, you were afraid to tell people because you were a kid and who would believe you. Were you worried about whether people would believe you today?
No. No. Absolutely not.
This happened, as you describe it, it was a skater, a teammate or a would-be teammate mm-hmm. of yours mm-hmm. That did this. How do you think it affected – I mean, this seems like a strange question. How do you think it affected the skating itself? I mean, do you think had this not happened, would your skating career have been different?
If this didn't happen – yeah, I would be different. But also, any change of path, life would be different. This is not why – this burden and this pain is not why I missed the Olympic teams that I missed. But it – now I use it in a way where if I'm training or if I'm working and it's hard or if I'm doing anything and it's hard, it'll never be as bad as it was. So I didn't get to where I got because of this. I got to where I got to despite this. And this, my success and my character is of no gratitude to him and no thank you to him. But despite that, I was able to go and I'm able to put it in perspective of, am I afraid that someone's not going to believe me today? No, because it's the truth. And there's nothing someone can do to make my life as dark as it was over the past couple years.
I'm curious. It's hard to imagine. You're 15, mm-hmm. you're being abused, mm-hmm. and you have to go out and skate a race. Do you have any sense for how you did that?
Skating the races wasn't hard. It was going back to high school. I mean, think about it. Think about the summer between 9th grade and 10th grade. That's when it was. And it was... it wasn't as if we were old enough to drink or anything like that or drive a car. So, I mean, I was 15. That's on the level of, Mom, can I have ice cream after school? Can I have chips? Can I watch TV? So So sneaking around with someone, I'm 31 now, and I'm not yet how old he was. So skating was the easy part. It was going back to school. It was going to the 10th grade homecoming when you're supposed to be – I mean, 10th grade, you're supposed to fumble around in the backseat of a car. You're not supposed to be with a grown man. And that was the part that was so, so hard.
Did your parents know?
No. Absolutely no one knew. I didn't tell anyone while it was happening. I did not tell anyone until 2007. And I didn't tell any of my family until 2009. And it happened in 97.
What was your family's reaction when you told them?
They felt very betrayed because Andy did it in classic textbook form. He befriended my family, and my mom would have, I mean, he came over to our house for breakfast once, I remember. My mom taught him some piano lessons. My dad was his doctor. He played it textbook. And so and my siblings knew about him. I mean, I was 15, but I have two younger siblings and three older siblings. And they all know who he is. And so they felt very betrayed.
Was there a point – I mean, you're 15 mm-hmm. and, you know, 15-year-old girls and boys have, you know, crushes on older people on a fairly routine basis. Mm-hmm. Was there any point in this when the 15-year-old thought that this was the right thing to do?
No. I knew it was always – wrong, and I knew that because he made it be a secret. But I will say that the 15-year-old thought it was exciting. The 15-year-old was starstruck. He was, in our little world, in our skating world, in our ice world, Andy Gable is a celebrity. He ultimately made it to four Olympic Games. He has an Olympic medal. He won numerous U.S. championships. I knew he was friends with the likes of Bonnie Blair and these folks, which growing up as a kid, these are the people you want to be. I mean, these are the Michael Jordans of the sport. But for him to actually talk to me and for him to take my skates and take care of my skates, there's a huge amount of work that goes into the equipment piece. For him to do that, for him to, I mean, to again, put it in perspective, he let me drive his car. I mean, how crazy cool is that to be 15 and to be able to drive a Lexus? But that also puts into perspective how much of a kid that is. And so, yeah, I was starstruck and I was lucky or felt lucky or special to be the chosen one that got the attention. But I also quickly learned that this isn't free, this attention, these fixing of my blades, all that stuff. But at the same time, you know what? I wanted to skate and I just wanted to skate and skate and skate. And so I don't know. You take the good, the bad, and this is shit. You know, you hear about this all the time, but it doesn't have to be that way. And yeah,
what does the 31-year-old think of what the 15-year-old thought?
It's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. I am not yet as old as he was then. And at 15 years old, I was 119 pounds. I mean, I was a teeny thing. And it is just so skewed and so off and so disgusting and such a violation of the authority and the power that he knew he had. And today I'm at the rink and I skate around and I have my old Team Issue USA stuff and I say something and these kids listen. I say, hey, Joe, how are you doing? Hey, Claire, how are you? And they, oh, hi, Brady, how are you? And it's, you can see that. And I'm aware of what those kids look up to us as. And so you act appropriately.
Do you, I mean, you skate with any number of people who today are the age that you were then.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see yourself in a way as needing to look out for them?
I can't take on the task of looking out for all of these folks, but I can be a model in that if someone is – there's a few folks that might hear this right now. If it's a jerk who's considering doing this, it'll come back to get you, and so don't do it. So the guy that might be saying, well, maybe it's not that bad or something of that nature, just, you know, it'll stop before it happens. For the person that it's happening to, you can call people. You can call and get help. And not sound like my grandmother, but with the age of the internet, there's so many resources online. There's so many things that we can provide folks with that there's places you can call. I mean, I remember going to a payphone to call him. Just, you know, like I didn't have a cell phone. But, and then for the folks that someone might approach them, you say no and you just stiff arm them. And then you call me or you call any of the Women's Sports Foundation. The U.S. Olympic Committee has Safe Sport Initiative. There's a lot of places where people can call now. And so in that part, to be a voice for young girls and also young boys in sport.
How did it end?
He went to the Olympics. When Andy made the Olympic team, he drove to Milwaukee, actually, and trained at the Pettit before going over to Nagano, Japan. So when he left, it ended. Then it happened once more at the World Team Trials in Marquette, Michigan. And then that was in March 1998. And then in March, later in March of 1998 in Saratoga Springs, New York, at the Age Group Nationals, he came up to me. He was there, I don't know, probably getting his stuff to move back to Milwaukee. He was probably getting his stuff. And he came up to me and said, did you tell anyone? Did you tell anyone? Did you tell this person, my best friend at the time? Did you tell anyone? Don't. And that's when I knew this isn't good. So.
You've encountered him since?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I encountered him a lot. I mean, he went on to be involved in SLOC, the Salt Lake Olympic Committee. He went on to be the president of U.S. Speed Skating. He is involved in the International Skating Union for the Short Track Committee. And, yeah, I saw him a lot throughout my tenure skating, and that was really, really hard to act like everything was fine. And it wasn't. And the older I got, the more I realized, like, this is wrong.
He cannot be prosecuted under state law at this stage, correct?
I cannot press civil charges against him.
What do you hope happens?
Well, my goal here is not to go after him. My goal is not to go after Andy Gable. I think if you're running a race of revenge, that I apologize for not quoting this correctly, whomever said it. But when you're running the race of revenge and that's your sole goal to kill someone, you got to dig two graves because it's going to get you in the end as well. And that's not my purpose. My purpose is to help change the culture of sport and make it a safer place, make this something we can talk about. I think maybe we can parallel it to the breast cancer awareness. There was a time when you couldn't talk about it. You know, why isn't your wife here? Oh, so how about the weather? No, she's not here because she has breast cancer. My sister has breast cancer. I have breast cancer. You can talk about it. And to the extent where some people criticize it as an industry. But the fact is, we can talk about it. And those women did not choose to have breast cancer. They did not choose that. And so these kids that are abused did not choose this. And but to be able to come forward and say, I was sexually abused and it affected me in these ways. What I've noticed in my sharing my story and the amount that I have, the amount of people that have come out and told me about them being abused when they were 4 years old, 5 years old, raped in college. Sometimes people dilute the word rape with date raped, but it's raped.
Do you see yourself as having been raped?
I'm not answering that. I was raped by somebody else. But I, and both men and women telling me about their childhood sexual abuse.
Would you expect to be sued for defamation of character?
No, because I'm telling the truth and I'm not out to get him. That's not the purpose of this.
If he were to drag you into court,
mm-hmm.
how would you establish that what you are telling is the truth?
I would work with my legal counsel to bring the evidence that I have.
But you have evidence is what I'm asking.
Yeah, I would bring the evidence that I have and it would be a quick show.
You talk about wanting the change that you affect to be in the area of ensuring safe sports.
Yeah.
Do you feel like were you let down by the system in any way?
Yeah.
How?
I didn't have anybody I could go to.
Within speed skating, within any, you know, just
in
general.
Within speed skating, within, unfortunately, my family, within my school. There was recently a priest that was removed from our local church for sexual abuse, so can't go there. Yeah, I do. But I think that now at least kids today, they have smartphones and iPads and everything. And we do talk about how kids have access to things that we don't want them to, but also they have access to things that they need to. And so they can look up Safe Sport with the U.S. Olympic Committee, and they can look up what the Women's Sports Foundation has. So there are more lines like that for them to call.
This is a strange hypothetical question, but do you wish you had said something 5 years ago, 10 years ago, or
I wish I said something that day. I wish I said something the day that it happened. And If the person I told didn't believe me, to tell somebody else and to tell somebody else and to tell somebody else until someone listened. I was asked by someone at the end of that season in March of 1998 if, what's wrong? You just seem off. You seem down. You seem distracted. And I didn't – I was scared to death of saying something, and I wish I had said something. And it would have made my – the remainder of my high school career awkward, but awkward isn't the extreme amount of pain that I had.
Do you worry what this story coming out could do to your sport? I mean, to people that are – not necessarily guilty of anything, but for whom the sport could be shaken in a way that it affects them?
No. I mean, this is unfortunately way more prevalent than we want to accept, and it might shake U.S. speed skating, the U.S. Olympic Committee a little bit, but that's how change and progress is achieved. So, no. I mean, it's only gonna make the whole place safer, the whole place better. And for any of those folks that say, oh, great, now we have to deal with this, well, you know, get out your family photo and look at your daughter and then tell me what you think about it. And that might change the perspective of a few folks.
When you're out on the oval at the Pettit and yeah. you're skating, where does this stuff exist in your psyche?
In my bag. When I get on the ice, it's something that I think about all the time is win, what's important now. And when I'm skating, the important thing is to have the pressure go through my legs into the ice, to have my hips in the right position, to think – I just think about the technique and the skating, and that's what's important at that time. So when I'm skating, I'm skating. But and I can focus on that. I think depending on the traction that this takes, maybe folks will want to ask me questions. But nobody's going to ask me a question when I'm skating. So –
they'd have to catch you first.
Exactly. Good luck. So, yeah, I mean, is this the best time? No, there's no good time to talk about these kind of things, but it's imperative. And if this is such a distraction that I can't even train here anymore, there's some person that hears this and because of this, they say no. Or somebody that was going to do something doesn't. And I'll never know who those people are, but they're out there. And so the grand scheme of things, me skating faster and faster and getting – I mean, it does not matter. Skating is great, and I love it, but I think it's Dan Jansen's dad that said there's a heck of a lot more to life than skating in circles.
Do you think it was important, though, that you tell the story while you were still skating?
No, not really. I think it'll – I mean, it's – different now that I have to go back into the rink and people are going to know about it and know who I am and that kind of thing. I think it's kind of good that I'm skating because if someone has a concern, they can come up to me and they can talk to me. But yeah, I don't think it matters much that I'm skating or not skating.
As you think about this
mm-hmm.
at age 31.
Yeah.
Does the idea that he messed with the wrong person come to mind?
It's funny you say that. So I don't know if he messed with the wrong person or the right person because I do not believe that everything happens for a reason. I don't believe that whatever it is you believe in, your God or whomever, picked me as a little girl and said, oh, mess with this one, ruin this one's life in this capacity. No God would choose something of that nature. It's unfortunate it happened to me, but in some twisted way, I'm glad that it happened to me because of who I grew to be. And I'm not just going to sit on the sideline and let it blow over. It took a while, and he had 15 years to hide in the shadow of it. But no, you picked the wrong person if you wanted that person to stay quiet, and for all the other kids out there, you picked the right person.
Is it putting words into your mouth to say that, you know, your comeback is about more than skating?
I think it's turning to be more than skating. I came back because I love to skate. I love to skate. I didn't come back because it's an opportunity for newspapers to recognize me again. It's an opportunity for me to gain attention in that capacity. But I have a different perspective on coming back. And I know we talked a lot about how it is to work and then to come back and skate and how all that perspective. But maybe in reference to what you said about leaving out a big part from the last interview, I mean, I went through some serious dark, dark depression and eating disorders and a lot of problems. And across the board, systematically, every doctor professional says, I'm sorry, but this is classic sexual abuse syndrome. This is how people deal with it. And so when I say I'm here to skate and I love to skate, that's what I'm here to do. And I mean, I was through some really dark times.
Bridie Farrell, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bridie Farrell is a speed skater who currently trains at the Pettit National Ice Center in Milwaukee. She spoke with Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke. We've reached out to Andy Gabel, offering him the opportunity to respond to this interview. We're committed to airing that response if and when it's preferred. Bridie Farrell mentioned several resources in her interview, including the U.S. Olympic Committee's Safe Sport program. There are links available at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. We'll take a short break now. When we return, we'll talk with a local bioethicist about the ethical questions surrounding genome sequencing as the technology becomes more common. Stay tuned for more of Lake Effect on WUWM.